absence makes the heart grow fonder. Welcome to the second of my musings from the middle of nowhere. According to the Phrase Finder, an online collection of phrases and their meanings, the Roman poet Sextus Propertius, that is a mouthful, gave us the earliest form of absence makes the heart grow fonder in elegies. Now his version reads, always toward absent lovers, love's tide stronger flows. All you have to do is do a quick Google search to find out that that idea is highly contested. Like, do we grow fonder of someone in his or her absence? Or does the absence of a lover actually give us an opportunity to find love someplace else? For me, this phrase holds a strong place in my episodic memory, thank you to my grandma. I am positive it is the first common adult phrase I ever wrote in my diary, and I wrote it when my heart missed a boy. Now, my grandma found the diary and read it, and next to my scribble, absence makes the heart grow fonder, she had the gusto to write in the margins, of someone else. Now, I was pretty incensed. Now, not typically because she had found and read my diary, but because in addition, she had commented about my missing a boy and had the audacity to suggest that I wouldn't continue to like him. Of course, I was in the fourth grade and I had no idea about love at the time, but I was still a little upset. So, for context about this boy, let's rewind a year. For a short time, my family lived in Kearney, where we attended a Baptist church on the hill. Now, the preacher at that church had two sons. My mother commented one day, "You know, Sam, I always wanted to marry a preacher's son. Now, this one's got two, so maybe you can marry one." I mean, until that point, I hadn't paid any attention to the preacher's sons, but I decided to set my eyes on the youngest. For the purposes of this, we will call him Jack. I mean, I was only 8 at the time, but when a girl ran up to me and said, "You want to go out with Jack?" I mean, I said yes, because of course I did, even though I didn't really know what going out meant, but she had not yet asked Jack if he wanted to go out with me, but evidently when she ran up to him and asked, he said yes, so I mean, we've been going out ever since. I mean, we never officially broke up, so that was the beginning of that. But from that point on, I knew I was going to make my mother happy and marry a preacher's son. I no longer complained about going to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. Every opportunity I could see Jack, I mean, I was the first person in the car, so my life just changed at that moment. Now, from Jack's point of view, it wasn't long before my zealous pursuit of him led to him often despising me. I chased that poor boy. I mean, I just wanted to impress him and make him think I was cool. So when the church ran this contest to win your way to summer camp, I thought, well, he's a preacher's son. He'll be impressed if I know a lot about the Bible. So I'm gonna win. We earned points for memorizing verses and the books of the Bible in order, like all 66 of them, which I can still recite from memory to this day. I will spare you the iteration of said talent, but I won my way. So grade school camps were actually split into 1 week of camp for boys and a week of camp for girls, separated by a week in between each session. That summer, Girls Week was actually first. Now, I learned at lunchtime that first day that the director of the camp handed out letters. And if you had one letter, you kissed the pretty bird. If you had 3 or more letters, you kissed the dirty bird. Now, everybody wanted to kiss the pretty bird because that was the replica of the dove that Noah saw after the flood. The Darty Bird, on the other hand, was like some Jim Henson reject Muppet because it was not attractive. It was like purple and green and had googly eyes. I mean, I thought that a good idea would be to go home in between Boys and Girls Camp and spend the week writing letters to Jack and start sending them on Friday so that every day of camp he would have to kiss the Darty Bird. I'm not sure why I thought that that particular act would increase my chances of marrying him, but I did. I am confident that that particular summer camp experience for him was the beginning of his disdain at my very name, but I was undeterred from loving him. When we moved back to the farm, you know, he was only like 50 miles away, but when you don't have a car, that might as well be Mordor. So that explains the entry about absence in my diary. As we headed into junior high, boys and girls were combined for junior-senior camp. My parents still let me attend camp with that church, even though we didn't attend anymore. But throughout each school year, I just looked forward to camp and seeing Jack. So the first time in the spring when the information came about camp and I found out there was this Bible knowledge trophy, I was like, oh, another opportunity to impress. The questions at camp were things like, you know, just basic Bible trivia, like how long is the ark, or, you know, verse memorization. But my favorite questions were the ones like this. So what's the second book before the first book after Proverbs? Now, most kids do not do the math, and they just counted forward and backward as they were like saying the books in their head. And all I did was subtract and say Psalms. Now, each right answer won me a candy bar. And of course, I gave all mine to Jack. I did not give him the trophy that I won at the end of camp, but he got all my candy. At the end of the week, the last activity on the closing day was the shaving cream fight. It was the only time that boys and girls could get close to each other and could touch, because otherwise there was this strict like 6-inch rule thing. No, so I'm not sure how we got to have a shaving cream fight, but we did. And I saw it as my opportunity to not only touch, but fondle Jack, who had only grown more irritated with me despite my candy bar gifts. Well, I had my hands on him, but he had his hands on me for a very different reason. Now, because his dad was a preacher, he was there as a counselor, and his mom was there too. So with them watching, he mauled me, and his point was like, are you seeing this, Mom and Dad? Do you see how much I'm beating this girl up? I am not going to marry her. Because his parents had kind of gotten the idea, like my parents, that we were destined to get married. Now, a couple years later, Jack ended up moving to Texas. And that was, you know, I was like Jupiter. I'm not talking about Mordor. That was Jupiter to me. Now, we talked on the phone a couple times a year, so I guess he didn't completely abhor me, but you know, I listened to Dusty Springfield's Son of a Breacher Man so often that I don't even know if it'll play anymore. Like, I wore that thing out. But in high school, Jack did visit me a couple times, but you know, we dated other people, and that was just kind of the way it was. But his senior year, you know, I think his girlfriend must have broken up with him shortly before prom, because he ended up asking me to his senior prom. And so my parents, who were excited that I still might end up marrying a preacher's son, drove me the 4 hours to the airport in Denver and put me on a plane to Dallas. Because his parents were, you know, leaders in the Baptist church, I mean, his dad was still a preacher and his mom was a preacher's wife, they did not believe in dancing. So we were only supposed to attend the banquet at the prom. But being teenagers, we danced anyway. And you know, the next morning at breakfast before church, his mom served us sausage burritos. And I don't know what came over me, but I mentioned something about dancing, and his parents' faces were horrified, and Jack's face was horrified, and he was so ticked off at me. He got in so much trouble, and you know, he didn't talk to me for 5 years after that. I mean, I totally upset him. But anyway, when his dad took me to the airport and I got on the plane, sat down, plugged in my headphones, the Yellow Rose of Texas was playing. And you know, even now when I catch that song, I feel 18 and I hurt for the impending absence. Like I said, it was 5 years before he talked to me again, so I was in grad school by the time I visited him, and he had moved south to Beaumont, Texas, which you may know is basically the home to Footloose. We actually did the Footloose experience. Like, we crossed the state line, went into Louisiana, danced at a club, came home, and went to church the next day. Now, I was smart enough to not say anything to his parents about dancing that time, but as things go, even though I said nothing, we lost touch, and because it was about the time to get married, we married other people. Now, all this leads into my current dating life. Now, when a guy was interested in me and revealed that he was the son of a preacher man, and a Baptist preacher man at that, I was a little shaken because I thought maybe I still have a chance to marry a preacher's son. I was a little excited at this, so I got on Facebook, which I rarely do, and I posted that I had found the son of a preacher man. Somehow, Jack, who I hadn't talked to in like 20 years, saw this post. I mean, I didn't even know we were friends, and I was just shocked because I hadn't heard from him forever, and his reply was, "I know a man like that." Well, I messaged him, and he messaged me his phone number, and we talked for a few hours. We just kind of caught up and talked about our kids and, of course, our respective divorces. But anyway, the next day, I did a live on social media. At this point, I should tell you that I have over 500,000 followers, but that's beside the point. Anyway, I told a bit of the story on this live, and I talked about the new guy and, you know, reconnecting with Jack, and then I played the Celine Dion song, "It's All Coming Back to Me Now." Well, the new guy heard it and texted me and said, "Hey, I heard that live." I had no idea he was on the live, and I was like, "Oh, and?" And he said, "I'm out." I was speechless, and that was over. I mean, I tried to text him, kind of explain, but that it was done. So now, fast forward a few months, I had not had any further contact with Jack, and you know, I just took a vacation by myself to Florida. And on my way back from Florida, I had a layover in Dallas. So I just texted Jack and contacted him and said, you know, every time I'm in Dallas or fly and stop in Dallas, you know, I think about you. And so he texted back and said, well, we can go to breakfast. And I was like, okay, I'm going to need to put on some makeup at least. I mean, I'm in sweats and a sweatshirt, but at least I can put on some makeup. So I did. He came and picked me up. And, you know, we had a great couple hours just kind of talking about our parents and the past and really reconnecting. It just felt good. Now, the gap between his front teeth is gone. He has a beard. But when I saw him, I just thought, it's still Jack. That meeting in Dallas was a few months ago, and nothing has developed further. It is likely nothing ever will. But you know, you never know. Does absence make the heart grow fonder of each other or of someone else? I'll end with two poems this time, both about absence. First my own, and the second from Edna St. Vincent Millay. So this first one is entitled simply, Missing You. Sitting here missing you sitting here, in the gloaming of this warm October night. The corn dust in the yard light resonates life after dark, our last touch filtered through the flurry of fragments, fingers finding scars, mind under my eye from a rock my sister threw, yours under your lip from a trip onto a sprinkler head. You kissed mine, I kissed yours. And where are you now? Discovering new scars, a new one forming here in your absence. And from Edna St. Vincent Millay, one of my favorite sonnets, What Lips My Lips Have Kissed and Where and Why. What lips my lips have kissed and where and why I have forgotten, and what arms have lain under my head till morning. But the rain is full of ghosts tonight that tap and sigh upon the glass and listen for reply. And in my heart there stirs a quiet pain for unremembered lads that not again will turn to me at midnight with a cry. Thus, in the winter stands the lonely tree, nor knows what birds have vanished one by one, yet knows its boughs more silent than before. I cannot say what loves have come and gone. I only know that summer sang in me a little while, and in me sings no more. As I conclude, I invite you to consider the effects that absence has had on your relationships. Thank you for joining me for Musings from the Middle of Nowhere. And as always, I hope my middle of nowhere is somewhere close to yours. Look for upcoming episodes, The Devil in Disguise, and We Must Cultivate Our Gardens. But first, we'll enjoy a little look at Elvis and his importance in my life, and the second, a little philosophy from Voltaire.